T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Listen to every game here.
Back goes Bradley. Near the center field fence. That ball is gone. A two-run home run for Wilson Contreras.
On Sports Radio 670, The Score. Live from the Hyundai Studios. Presented to you by your local Hyundai dealers. We are WSCR and HD Chicago. WBMX HD2 Chicago. And Odyssey Station. The Score!
This hour is brought to you by Menards. Save big money at Menards.
Mully and Hall. Live and local. Chicago Sports Talk for your morning on 670 The Score.
Well, we were in an excellent position going to the sixth inning. And I think the best way to explain the sixth inning, I mean, I did a really lousy job of managing that inning. And it really hurt our chances to win.
And then Kyle Hendricks, what did you see out of him today that you did not see out of him on opening day?
He looked more comfortable in rhythm, executing pitches in and out. Good depth to the changeup, I thought, today. I thought the fastball command was much better than last time. Ahead of hitters a little more. Looked like he was in a good rhythm. He had to work hard a couple innings, but I thought that was a better version of Kyle for sure.
Mully and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. You heard the voices there of Tony La Russa talking about how he blew the game in the sixth inning. And there's no argument, I don't think, from anyone today. I'd be curious, does someone think that Tony did a good job in the sixth inning? Love to hear from you. 312-644-6767. And that's David Ross talking about the difference from the first day we saw Kyle Hendricks to the to the performance yesterday.
Are you trying that hard to get Rick Hahn on the show that you want him to call to defend Tony La Russa yesterday? He might be the only guy.
How do I put this? Bruce said earlier that at least Tony admitted that he had made an error, and that you know, as if that is some badge of accomplishment or honor. Yes, he admitted it. Do you know why he admitted it? Because he made an unbelievable bungle of things in the sixth inning. He destroyed their chances to win the game by not just going to Matt Foster. I understand you have to use guys that are relievers. But why you keep a guy in who's getting his brain battered through 34 pitches and 8 different batters, that's beyond human comprehension, David. And to go into an inning where you're leading 4-1 and come out of it down 8-4, I don't know how else you're supposed to feel. Do you think that's great that he admitted it?
I don't think that you see that all the time. I think that he called it lousy, which is an extra descriptor, but I don't want to congratulate him for acknowledging and grasping the obvious because it was a bad decision. He did make it. He should be held accountable. The question I think it does raise is, you know, because it is early in the season, Mully, is that this is a new staff. We've talked a lot about Ethan Katz and all that he brings to the table, and he has already made an impact by people we have talked to and trust and respect. So where was he during this? I mean, doesn't the pitching coach at some point in time like kind of look over, hey, boss, you know, not happening today, doesn't have it. You know, maybe after the fifth batter, maybe after the sixth batter, but to last 8 hitters and throw as many pitches as he threw yesterday. I mean, Foster threw 34 pitches, and he was left in there to face Seager. At some point in time, don't your staff mechanics have to be better that somebody speaks up and says, this is not a good idea?
I really like what you're saying here. I think it touches on a couple different points. Tony La Russa is a Hall of Fame manager. And, you know, one of the things that he's known for is being kind of the father of the modern bullpen. He's a guy that really kind of was a breakthrough type guy, understanding specialized roles, etc. And I think it's fascinating that is Ethan Katz, is he intimidated by that? Well, is he still a young enough coach that might not, you know, what did he see? Did he say something to Tony? Did he not? Is he not allowed to say something? At what point does someone have to, like, jostle him and say, hey, this guy is on his eighth batter. We ought to try something else.
Ethan Katz was born in the summer of 1983, and we know where Tony La Russa was that summer. And that the age disparity isn't the biggest thing. It is the respect factor, and it's, I don't want to call it it is possibly the intimidation factor. It can be very difficult to work around living legends because the assumption is that they're always going to be right, and boy, how dare anybody question what they're doing, when in fact yesterday somebody should have questioned what he was doing because it was the wrong thing. And it wasn't only the first guessing or the second guessing, it was La Russa questioning himself after the fact. What a championship team will do, and a championship staff will do, and the way it will function, and that's what this White Sox season is all about. You got to have somebody in the room, in the dugout, in the clubhouse, willing to question Tony La Russa in real time, not just analysts after the fact like us discussing it a day later. You have to have somebody who can stand up to him and question him and say, "Hey, Tony, we need to get ahead of this." And I don't know that it didn't happen or that it did, but the result speaks for itself. And Tony La Russa afterward, it was bad enough to where he called his own judgment lousy, and nobody disagreed with that.
312-644-6767. Do you agree with David that it is not Tony La Russa's fault? It's that coward, that cowardly Katz that led to this horrible moment for the White Sox.
Have I
gone too far again?
No, not at all.
Okay.
No.
The Score listener line is powered by BetQL. Bet smarter and beat the books. Download the BetQL app today or visit BetQL.com. Alex is in Deerfield. Good morning, Alex. How are you?
Morning, Alex.
Hey, good morning. Love your show, though, and longtime listener. I was just listening this morning, actually, and I caught the show, and I wondered about that in the sixth, and I'm thinking maybe there's some bad data in MLB because they have Bummer here with an ERA of 0, and, you know, he blew it the other night. And, you know, Foster and Ruiz, maybe, like, good picks at the time, but, you know, Foster let up 5 hits, and, like, the other night, you know, he also let up a couple of runs just like Bummer. So I'm worried, you know, maybe there's a problem internally.
Yeah, well, it's fair to be worried. Go ahead. I'm sorry,
yeah,
David.
No, I think it's okay to be worried. I mean, the Sox bullpen has been disappointing in week one. I am not ready to jump off the Aaron Bummer bandwagon because Aaron Bummer is terrific. And if he is healthy, he is going to be a guy that is good more often than he is bad, and he is a future closer. And he may not be off to the greatest start. He had that one outing that I think stands out in your memory of the first 7 games. But Aaron Bummer is, if you're buying or selling Aaron Bummer, give me all the Aaron Bummer stock you got because I'm a believer.
I'm very curious when we start talking about bullpen stuff. And I believe in the White Sox bullpen. I believe completely in Aaron Bummer, and I think that he is a really good pitcher, and I think he's going to be fine. But it is a fact that when we talk about bullpens, we always say the same thing, which is they change year to year. It is sometimes difficult for guys in relief roles to sort of mirror the performance from the year before, and there are ups and there are downs, and it's not a certainty when you get to figuring out who can do what in a bullpen. And you're relying on a certain fraction of younger guys that you expect to be able to duplicate how well they played a year before. And is that maybe a flaw in the way that you think about things?
Great point. So what I take out of that, as long as we're twisting context here, is that is that Mully has given up on Matt Foster and says he was a flash in the pan in 2020. So I think that's kind of what you're saying there. But the point really is well taken in all seriousness. The toughest thing to project on any baseball team is the bullpen season to season. You can pick out isolated guys like individuals such as Liam Hendricks. He's going to be terrific because you figure he has been. And the closer's role is more defined and structured. But I think the guys who came out of nowhere and emerged last year, the Cody Hoyers of the world, the Matt Fosters certainly, you do wonder because we've seen it happen with the Cubs. We've seen it happen with the White Sox. Every baseball team goes through that. So year to year, it's harder to project. And you hope that the White Sox aren't going to experience and be reminded of that this year because we've heard all along how good and great this bullpen can be. We just haven't seen it in the first seven games.
I like the way this is going with our show. I think we've discovered a new, almost a different segment we could use, which is misquoting each other out of context. It's a smart and catchy way to keep the conversation moving. Let's get back to the phone lines. 312-644-6767. OB is on the south side. Good morning, OB.
What's up, OB?
Hey, good morning, guys. Hey, listen, I just want to say, how about instead of ripping Tony La Russa, all you guys, and I love you guys, but listen, all you guys been doing is ripping La Russa before he even got here. The man admitted that he made a mistake after the game. How many managers come out at the end of a game and admit guilt or admit that they did something wrong? Tony makes no excuses. How about let's embrace Tony coming back to the South Side for the first freaking time since, what, 88? Let's go, guys!
Yeah, I don't think we're the ones that have been ripping into Tony. I really don't. I think that I can, I want the White Sox to do well, and I want Tony to be the Hall of Fame manager. I just think I have a hard time kind of rewarding someone for accepting the truth of what happened. I mean, Tony, he had a lousy inning. I think as a manager, he had a lousy inning because his relief pitcher couldn't get it done, and he left him out there for eight different batters and 34 pitches. So I'm not against Tony La Russa. I'm just not celebrating the idea that, well, Tony acknowledged it. Other guys don't acknowledge it. What if he denied it? What if he said, well, that wasn't me, that was Ethan Katz? I mean, come on. We'd be laughing right. And killing him for that. So I watched the Sox. I want the Sox to win. And I was sitting there in live time, wondering why the hell they don't take this guy out. I was yelling at the TV, take him out, enough, because it wasn't working and it was going from bad to worse.
And just the last thing before we break, before Jason Benetti joins us at 8:20. So I don't think that you have to look at it. It's not a check a box either or yes or no. You believe in Tony La Russa unconditionally or you don't. When he was hired, I think we raised legitimate questions about, number one, the process that Jerry Reinsdorf hijacked because he owns a team, and number two, bringing a guy back given his history with DUIs. That's all legitimate and fair ground. Once they were able to cross that ground, then we look at him as a manager, and does he have what it takes to still function at a high level? I think we both have been open-minded about that. He has the success and the track record that buys him that credibility and earns him the benefit of the doubt. So you go into the season and you evaluate. And when he identifies something he did wrong, you're not inclined to disagree because you thought the same thing as you watched it. And maybe not everybody was yelling as loudly as Mully was at the television set, but everybody realized that this was bad.
Dude, I mean, I'm talking to OB. You had a team on the ropes. You had a bad team on the ropes. You're up 4-1. You really should have had a better lead given all the walks that were surrendered. But you had a team, a bad team, and you're about to sweep them. Finish the job. That's all I'm saying, okay? Just make sure you get out of that inning so that you have the lead. You give up the two runs, that's going to happen. I'm not going to kill them for that. But it wasn't competitive after that. They couldn't get back in the game. And that's what was upsetting about it because you should have won the damn game. period, end of story. We'll bring in Jason Benetti, and we'll talk about some of the happy, fun things going on with the White Sox, especially on a day like today. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
Seager left-hand side. That is down, and the Mariners will take the lead in a big way. Third run coming. It is a three-run double for Kyle Seager, and it's 7-4 Seattle. 2-2 struck him out. And 8-4 is your final score. The Mariners with a win, Steve.
This one better left forgotten.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. It's a pleasure to welcome in Jason Benetti, brought to you by Alpamonte Nissan, Alpamonte Nissan in Melrose Park on North Avenue, or apnissan.com. Our thanks to NBC Sports Chicago for the highlight and for Jason Benetti. Jason, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Jason.
Mully and Haw, did you not hear what Stoney said? He doesn't want to hear about that game anymore. And then you just played the highlights again.
Were those highlights? I am not certain. You know, we were talking. Listen, we're not going to pick it apart with you. What's the point? But the bullpen is supposed to be the best in Major League Baseball. And I'm still very hopeful that that holds up. But it's been a little bit. Two things that jump out at you is the defense has been rough to start, and the bullpen's been a little rough to start. So I don't know if that means anything. I don't know if that holds up. I think, you know, the best idea is to try to ignore it and hope for the best. But you can't help but wonder if those two things were going a little better, what would the record be? And the record's fine, but it's just something to notice. That's all.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. I think it's very interesting the way the first week works, though, that if Aaron Bummer would have gotten better defense from number one himself off that accidental deflection early in the series in Anaheim, and then Madrigal at second base, if that lead held up, and then Tony La Russa obviously took responsibility for yesterday with Foster going 34, whatever pitches it was, especially after the walk to France. I mean, the Seager hit came right after the walk to France. So I wonder if, you know, ifs and buts, candy and nuts, right? But if that lead held up yesterday, what we would think about the bullpen. I am simply going by stuff in the bullpen. I think the White Sox bullpen has stuff for days, and I still think that. So I am bullish on the bullpen in a major way. I don't feel those same concerns because I get why the leads went away the first week of the season, and I don't think they have anything to do with stuff, and I think over 162, stuff wins out.
Jason, you sit next to Stoney, and he has tremendous patience. He's positive and the perspective of all the experience watching a lot of seasons. I just wondered, does that help you resist kind of the temptation that a lot of us have in drawing some grand conclusions after such a small sample size? Because the first seven games, the Sox have had seven errors, and we've seen the blown leads. The expectations were so high that I think this year more than others, people will be prone to have that frustration because they expected so much more so quickly. Do you have to watch yourself as you call these games?
I just think over the course of doing 10 minor league seasons and watching people who were not players at all, even in A-ball, become major league players, and watching people in AAA who struggled for a long time and then made fixes, I just tend to think I take the long view of baseball in the first place. But I agree. I mean, Stoney, like I asked Stoney point blank yesterday about somebody warming up in the bullpen, and at that point, he agreed with the decision to not have somebody up and let Foster go ahead and do it. And I think by the end of the inning, we both looked at each other and said, and I said it on the air, I think this is one of those games where Tony La Russa is going to wish that he had rearranged the bullpen usage. And that ended up being true. So I think you can make assertions about specific games without that specific game really coloring your view of something that is a large scale picture. But yeah, Stoney is Stoney's positive, but he's also very direct. And I think that's a wonderful combination to have over the course of a baseball season.
Well, I'm curious about you and Steve. How are your hamstrings? Are you stretching enough? Are you getting a lot of fluids? Because, my God, I've got hamstring injuries just out of, just sympathy for all the Sox players that suddenly have hamstring issues. How did this become a thing? It's kind of depressing.
Yeah, is this where I tell you that in, like, third grade I had hamstring surgery as well? mine are okay now, but, you know, it took a while, right? You know, so I guess I fit in with the motif. It's an interesting deal. I mean, Billy Hamilton immediately grabbed for his yesterday, and I think this is the hardest part of baseball is you see two things happen at once, and you want to say they're connected in some way. And then you resist it, but then you really want to dig on it. And baseball gives you all these crumbs to sort of lead you somewhere in the forest. And you never know if you're getting to the exit or if you're going deeper into the forest. And that's the most interesting part about all this for me. And to watch, and I know it's just maddening for fans. And I know you guys talk about it every day because that's what you do for hours, and I appreciate the heck out of that. And it's wild to suss out. Like, I would love to have a show where, like, for all of us, anybody who covers a team, anybody who is a beat writer, where we all go on at the end of a season and say, how did we do the first week of the season? Because I just wonder what the hit rate would be of, like, things we thought were noise and things we didn't think were noise and how many were and weren't. That is the best part of week one for me, because I always flip back to the first day of the season in, like, September in my scorebook, and I go, he was in the opening day lineup? What what is this lineup?
So, Jason, because it is so early, it's only been a weekend, but when you look at the Tony La Russa experience, or maybe it is still an experiment, we'll wait and see. What stands out about observing him, hearing him? Because I think, you know, when you talk about this being an interesting opening to a season, it's largely because he's a really compelling character, and everybody's sort of curious to see what happens next with this.
Absolutely. I think he's really compelling. I think my takeaway from the Anaheim series was, and this is yesterday notwithstanding, because what I'm about to say does not, and this is why I think he took responsibility for yesterday. Yesterday didn't compute with what I saw in the Anaheim series, where everything was intentional. There was a reason for using this person and a reason for using that person. And I know there was some criticism of the Albert Pujols intentional walk, but he did it in order to get another guy out to the mound. He faced that extra batter, the intentional walk counts, so you want another guy. And it felt like in the Anaheim series, he was playing a step ahead. And so I think the intent of what Tony La Russa is doing in the bullpen is nice to have. And that's why I thought yesterday was quizzical. And, you know, what he came out and said after the game was important, I think, for Sox fans, because he is somebody who really does understand the bullpen. And he just rearranged the relievers yesterday and gave Foster too many pitches. And I think, you know, he used the word lousy. So I think, look, he's the type of guy who, from knowing people who covered him in the past and reading extensively about him, he's not going to do the same thing twice. And I think it's just going to be an interesting road to watch for the rest of the season to see what he does with this club.
I was very amused yesterday when you did the walking man walks, and I had that song in my head for the rest of the game. But you know, when you look back on that game, they got so many opportunities early. They really should have had, like, 7 runs. I mean, it really should have been a closer game just based on how many walks that guy gave up.
It will drive you absolutely nuts, because we said it, right? Like, the Sox in the last couple of years, especially, like, 2017, 2018, the Sox were not well known for being a very patient team at all. I mean, it was like a very antsy offense. And then yesterday they come out and they're like, you know what? We're going to wait out Justin Dunn, and we're going to do exactly what we need to. And he walked eight, and it's everything you want against a starter who's erratic, and then you don't bring the guys home. And you're like, guys, what are you doing? And then, again, as a fan, you're like, okay, it's just one game. But then you're like, but what if it's not just one game? And what if, like, this game will absolutely tinker with your emotions and push your buttons. And I know it's very serious for a lot of people. I don't mean to make light, because Stoney and I were doing the same thing. It was like, yes, very patient, great stuff. We love it. And then the runs don't come home. And you're like, man, what happened? That was one of those games yesterday where you're like, what am I looking at? Because there was like catcher's interference, but a weird review of catcher's interference. And, like, just a lot of bizarre – the Madrigal caught stealing the Robert caught stealing pickoff thing at second base totally changed the game. I still don't think he was out. I still think instant replay needs to get more consistent. Agreed. Because if we can't see it with our naked eye, how are – like, and we're not getting announcements in – we're not even in the ballpark, but we still don't get announcements in the ballpark where every other sport does that. There was a lot there that I was like, is this contemporary art? Like, what is this?
You know, Jason, I don't care how much Sox math you apply, it'd be hard to compute Yermín Mercedes hitting .565 after the first week of the season. I wonder if he'll be back in the lineup today. He was given a well-deserved day off. How do you explain it, and how much fun has it been to chronicle?
I think you explain it in part, David, in that, like, this guy had the sheer will of his own, sometimes irrational belief that he was going to be a major league player. He was never renowned growing up as a catching prospect type guy defensively, but he always thought he could hit. Like, you talk to people in his life, he always thought he could hit. Even when the evidence was to the contrary, or even when he didn't get an opportunity, or when he was, you know, reputedly, and he's been honest about this, like, not the most mature guy in the world at all times. And then he bounces from organization to organization. That Pecos league that he was in, the independent league, I've done independent ball, and I hadn't heard of that league. It's like old mining towns in the Southwest. I didn't even think it was a real league when I looked it up. Like, I've done the Frontier League. I know the Atlantic League. Like, I know the St. Paul Saints. There's a Golden League out in California that I was familiar with. This Pecos League, I had no idea. There's a team called the Pulpfish. Like, I don't know what that is. And that is like rock bottom of professional baseball. And then this guy has the audacity to believe that he is going to be a major league hitter. And I think a lot of what you're seeing come out of that guy is sort of not like retribution, but is sort of like comeuppance for baseball in his mind for not noticing him sooner. And I kind of love that. I love the idea that there's somebody who, like, he and his family were the only ones for a while who believed he was going to be a major league hitter. And not only does he become a major league hitter after, you know, an 0-for-1 last year, but he takes the world by storm. It's like everything he's ever dreamed of in so many ways, not just because he made it to the big league, because he kind of showed everybody who said no to him that he's an actual thing and can be a star even for a week.
Oh, it's fantastic. Hey, Jason, thanks a ton. Have fun today with opening day. We hope you get it in, but fans going to be out there. It's just it's a magical time for all of us.
Thanks, Jason.
Don't go crazy watching baseball, everybody. Don't go crazy. It will drive you nuts. Thanks, guys.
Have fun.
He's so right about that, because I was off the deep end. And David, they broke down that Louis Robert pickoff play like it was the Zapruder film. I mean, they were using time codes to figure out, you know, when a guy is ruled safe and there's no visual evidence, let's just move on. Let's just move on. No, it drove me nuts. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
I think it's kind of headed, unfortunately, in the same direction. I think right now it's almost like a marriage that's starting to just have squabbles. They're squabbling about, you know, certain little issues, whether it's pass protection, whether it's talent. There's all these little squabbles going on right now, and I think because of Russell's contract situation, there's not a whole lot the Seahawks can do as far as moving him somewhere else, even if they wanted to. So I think he's definitely there this year. Unless they just want to take a hit and not become a really good football team for a year or so. But I think the marriage is not going to end very well going down the road. I think this squabble is going to turn into more of a separation and then a divorce at some point. And that usually happens with most players anyway. You just don't like it to happen because of, you know, the two sides not getting along.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. That's Warren Moon. He was on the Huddle and Flow podcast, and he was talking about Russell Wilson and predicting that this marriage is not going to last. And the Bears tried to be the other woman, the other man, whatever. They tried to interrupt that marriage.
The interloper.
They did. They offered everything. They offered a king's fortune, and it wasn't enough. And love survived, but will
home
it survive?
Wreckers.
Yes, that's right. There you go. I don't know that it will survive, and I don't know that the Bears will end up with their Russell Wilson, but we've been down that road, David. It hurts to reopen that wound, doesn't it?
Well, not really, because I don't think it was ever very realistic. So I'm not sure how deep the wound is. You don't have a quarterback. You need a quarterback. That wound is much deeper. The Russell Wilson stuff was pure fantasy, driven by the Bears' interest. But the fallacy, I think, was assuming that the Seahawks wanted to move on from Russell Wilson, which I think from a football standpoint is nonsense. We don't know about the relationship. I mean, Warren Moon can speculate. It's informed speculation. But Mully, I mean, look, if they do come to a divorce and they do go their separate ways, absolutely the Bears can still pivot. Everyone would understand and be extreme circumstances, but you don't plan your off season around the idea that something extreme will happen to shape it. So that's why they are where they are. And if things change, they'll adjust.
What's your take on, again, we've talked about the possibility of different quarterbacks. We've talked about offensive weapons. There were some tweets yesterday that were kind of comical, really. The idea that multiple teams are talking about trading for Anthony Miller. What would that trade consist of?
Okay. I mean, yeah, I have to chuckle because when I saw both nationally respected information guys, Ian Rappaport and Adam Schefter, tweet similar things yesterday about the Bears still coming close to a trade for Anthony Miller. That's kind of like a plea, isn't it? And then when we do what we do, that's like you're taking out an ad in football Craigslist, right? It's like, available, please take him for whatever. I don't think the Bears are going to get anything back for Anthony Miller. Do you?
I couldn't imagine it. I mean, based on what? His inconsistency, his bad shoulder, the fact that he's probably older than teams realize he is.
He's a palms up guy, Mully.
Yeah,
he's a palms
right.
up guy.
That's
Everything
right.
is right. you know, palms up. Not my fault. What happened? There's always a lot of those shots of Anthony Miller. So look, the offseason is not going to revolve around whether or not you get a slot receiver to replace Anthony Miller. They still have a question at quarterback. Andy Dalton is QB1. Okay. Who are they going to draft? They got to draft somebody. Where are they going to take that quarterback? Will they go all in and move up to 4 with the Falcons pick? Doubt it. I would not let that happen.
No.
Who do you like in the second round?
I like Kellen Mond. I like that idea. I like that name. I think he's a pretty decent player. Here's my fear. I don't like them moving up for the 4th quarterback, depending on who it is. I think we both like Justin Fields and if he is available. But the idea of trading up for an Alabama quarterback that wasn't nearly as good as the last Alabama quarterback, who hasn't been nearly as good as you thought he'd be, I just have a hard time knowing, again, that the wide receiving core doesn't come with the guy, thinking that Mac Jones is an answer for the Bears. I don't like it.
Do you still think that, as we suggested last week, that John Lynch is playing poker? That yeah. all the speculation has been this week about, okay, well, maybe he really does like Mac Jones and all of these other things. Maybe he's not going to be taking Justin Fields. I still think that you move up that boldly. You don't do it to get a quarterback that's considered a game manager, and maybe the ceiling isn't as high as some other guys. I think you move up there to get somebody who has dynamic, explosive skills like a Justin Fields. So I still think it's a game of poker. We'll find out. But a lot of people believe it's Mac Jones, and that's why they move there. I don't know about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think people look at Shanahan's system and think that Mac Jones is the kind of guy that can run play action and he would fit in what they're doing. Here's my problem with the whole thing, and we'll see how it unfolds. But if you take Mac Jones, don't you need to get rid of Jimmy Garoppolo and just let Mac Jones? I mean, it's not like he – if you take Justin Fields – then keep Jimmy Garoppolo and see if you can win with him. They've won with him in the past. He just hasn't been available enough. That's the problem with Jimmy G string, is that he's not there. Oh, sorry. He's not there all the time, and he's been sidelined by a lot of injuries. When he's been there, they've won. So I think that it's possible that Justin Fields isn't ready to be QB1, but I would think if you're trading up to get Mac Jones, why are you keeping Jimmy Garoppolo? That dichotomy duplicates. Bothers me.
They seem like they're duplicates, right? That's what you're getting at, and they're too similar in styles. And I think that there's a misperception out there, or misconception, I think, that because a coach offensively in football excels with players who are quarterbacks in particular – who are limited or are a certain type or style, play-action guys, bootleg guys, Kirk Cousins types, Jimmy Garoppolo types, like Kyle Shanahan has. There's almost like this assumption that those are the kind of quarterbacks he prefers. And just because somebody has won a way with a certain kind of quarterback doesn't mean he can't obviously adjust and adapt to somebody who may have a more explosive, vast skill set like a Justin Fields would. You win with who you have, or you try to, and Kyle Shanahan has done that regardless of the style of quarterback. It just has turned out those guys have had maybe, shorter ceilings, not as tall, high ceilings as some of the other quarterbacks that he could be coaching in the future.
Okay, we're going to get to transition. We've got a chance to talk to Dan and Layla today. We couldn't yesterday because of Ian Happ, but they don't have Ian Happ today. So they'll have us, and we'll do that next. It's Mully and Haw. It's Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 in the score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track 4 games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.